Chapter 9. The distance from London to Brinkley Court being 100 miles or so, and not much more than 2 minutes having elapsed since I had sent off that telegram, the fact that he was now outside the Brinkley front door struck me as quick service. It lowered the record of the chap in the motoring sketch, which Catsmeet Potter Purbright sometimes does at the Drones Club smoking concert, where the fellow tells the other fellow he's going to drive to Glasgow, and the other fellow says, "How far is that?" And the fellow says, 300 miles. And the other fellow says, "How long will it take you to get there?" And the fellow says, "Oh, about half an hour, about half an hour." The what-ho with which I greeted the back of his head as I approached was tinged accordingly with a certain bewilderment. At the sound of the old familiar voice, he spun round with something of the agility of a cat on hot bricks, and I saw that his dial, usually cheerful, was contorted with anguish, as if he'd swallowed a bad oyster. Guessing now what was biting him, I smiled one of my subtle smiles. I would soon, I told myself, be bringing the roses back to his cheeks. He gulped a bit, then spoke in a hollow voice, like a spirit at a séance.
"Hello, Bertie."
"Hello?
So there you are.
Yes, here I am."
"I was hoping that I might run into you.
Now the dream has come true.
You see, you told me you were staying here."
Yes.
"How's everything?"
"Oh, pretty fruity."
"Your aunt well?"
Fine.
"You all right?"
More or less.
"Capital. Long time since I was at Brinkley."
Yes.
"Looks about the same."
"Yes."
"Nothing much changed, I mean."
No.
"Oh, well, that's how it goes." He paused and did another splash of gulping,
and I could see that we were about to come to the nub, all that had gone before having been merely what they call poor parlours. I mean the sort of banana oil that passes between statesmen at conferences conducted in an atmosphere of the utmost cordiality before they tear their whiskers off and get down to cases. I was right. His face, working as if the first bad oyster had been followed by a second with even more spin on the ball, he said,
"I saw that thing in the Times, Bertie."
I dissembled. I ought, I suppose, to have started bringing those roses back right away, but I felt it would be amusing to kid the poor fish along for a while, so I wore the mask.
Ah, yes, in the Times, that thing. Yes, quite.
You saw it, did you?"
"At the club, after lunch." I couldn't believe my eyes.
Well, I hadn't been able to believe mine either, but I didn't mention this. I was thinking how like Bobby it was when planning this scheme of hers not to have let him in on the ground floor. Slipped her mind, I suppose. Or she may have kept it under her hat for some strange reason of her own. She'd always been a girl who moved in a mysterious way her wonders to perform.
And I'll tell you why I couldn't. You'll scarcely credit this. But only a couple of days ago, she was engaged to me.
Ah, you don't say.
Oh, yes, I jolly well do.
Engaged to you, eh?
Up to the hilt.
And all the while she must have been contemplating this ghastly bit of treachery.
Oh,
a bit thick. If you can tell me anything that's thicker, I shall be glad to hear it. It just shows you what women are like. A frightful sex, Bertie. There ought to be a law. I hope to live to see the day when women are no longer allowed. Well, that would rather put a stopper on keeping the human race going, wouldn't it?
Well, who wants to keep the human race going?
Ah, yeah, I see what you mean. Yes, something in that, of course. He kicked petulantly at a passing beetle, frowned a while, and resumed.
It's the cold, callous heartlessness of the thing that shocks me. Not a hint that she was proposing to return me to store.
As short a while ago as last week, when we had a bite of lunch together, she was sketching out plans for the honeymoon with the greatest animation. And now this? Without a word of warning. You'd have thought that a girl who was smashing a fellow's life into hash would have dropped him a line, if only a postcard. Apparently that never occurred to her. She just let me get the news from the morning paper. I was stunned.
Yeah, I bet you were. Did everything go black?
Pretty black. I took the rest of the day thinking it over, and this morning wangled leave from the office and got the car out and came down here to tell you...
He paused, seeming overcome with emotion. Yes? To tell you that whatever we do, we mustn't let this thing break our old friendship. Oh, of course not. No, no. Damn silly idea. It's such a very old friendship. I don't know when I met an older. We were boys together. Ah, in Eton jackets and pimples. Exactly. And more like brothers than anything. I would share my last bar of almond rock with you, and you would cut me in 50-50 on your last bag of acid drops. When you had mumps, I caught them from you, and when I had measles, you caught them from me, each helping each. So we must carry on regardless, just as if this had not happened. Quite. Same old lunches? Oh, rather. And golf on Saturdays, and the occasional game of squash. And when you're married and settled down, I shall frequently look in on you for a cocktail. Oh, yes, do, I will. Though I shall have to exercise an iron self-restraint to keep me from beaming that pie-faced little horn-swoggler, Mrs. Bertram Wooster, nay, Wickham with the shaker. Ought you to call her a pie-faced little horn-swoggler? Why, can you think of something worse? He said, with the air of one always open to suggestions. Do you know Thomas Otway? I don't believe so. A pal of yours? 17th century dramatist. Wrote The Orphan. In which play these words occur. What mighty ills have not been done by woman? Who was betrayed the capital? A woman. Who lost Mark Antony the world? A woman. Who was the cause of a long 10 years' war and laid at last old Troy in ashes? Woman. Deceitful, damnable, destructive woman. Otway knew what he was talking about. He had the right slant. He couldn't have put it better if he'd known Roberta Wickham personally. I smiled another subtle smile. I was finding all this extremely diverting. I don't know if it's my imagination, Kipper, I said, but something gives me the impression that at a moment of going to press you aren't too sold on Bobby. He shrugged a shoulder. Oh, I wouldn't say that. Apart from wishing I could throttle the young twister with my bare hands and jump on the remains with hobnail boots, I don't feel much about her one way or the other. She prefers you to me, and there's nothing more to be said. The great thing is that everything is all right between you and me. You came all the way here just to make sure of that, I said, moved. Well, there may possibly also have been an idea at the back of my mind that I might get invited to dig in at one of those dinners of Anatole's before going on to book a room at the Bull and Bush in Market Snobbery. How is Anatole's cooking these days? Oh, superber than ever. Continues to melt in the mouth, does it? 2 years since I bit into his products. But the taste still lingers. Oh, what an artist. Ah, I said. And I would have bared my head, only I hadn't a hat on. Would it run to a dinner invitation, do you think? Oh, my dear chap, the needy are never turned away from our door. Ah, splendid. And after the meal, I shall propose to Phyllis Mills. What? Oh, yes, yes, I know what you're thinking. She is closely related to Aubrey Upjohn, you are saying to yourself. But surely, Bertie, she can't help that. More to be pitied than censured, you think? Exactly. We mustn't be narrow-minded. She is a sweet, gentle girl, unlike certain scarlet-headed Delilahs who shall be nameless, and I am very fond of her. I thought you scarcely knew her. Oh, yes, yes, we saw quite a bit of one another in Switzerland. We were great buddies. It seemed to me that the moment had come to bring the good news from Aix to Gand, as the expression is. I don't know that I should propose to Phyllis Mills, Kipper. Bobby mightn't like it. But that is the whole idea, to show her that she isn't the only onion in the stew, and that if she doesn't want me, there are others who feel differently. What are you grinning about? As a matter of fact, I was smiling subtly, but I'll let it go. Kipper, I said. Kipper, I have an amazing story to relate. I don't know if you happen to take old Dr. Gordon's bile magnesia, which, when the liver is disordered, gives instant relief, acting like magic and imparting an inward glow. I don't myself, my personal liver being always more or less in mid-season form, but I've seen the advertisements.
They show the sufferer before and after taking. In the first case, with drawn face and hollow eyes and the general look of one shortly about to hand in his dinner pail. And in the second, all beans and buck, and what the French call bien être. Well, what I am driving at is that my amazing story had exactly the same effect on Kipper as the daily dose for adults. He moved, he stirred. He seemed to feel the rush of life along his keel. And while I don't suppose he actually put on several pounds in weight as the tale proceeded, one got the distinct illusion that he was swelling like one of those rubber ducks which you fill with air before inserting them in the bathtub. "Well, I am blowed," he said, when I placed the facts before him. "Well, I'll be a son of a whatnot. Yes, I thought you would be. Bless her ingenious little heart. Not many girls would have got the grey matter working like that. Oh, very few. What a helpmeet. Talk about service and cooperation. Have you any idea how it's working out? Rather smoothly, I think. On reading the announcement in the Times, Wickham Senior had hysterics and swooned in her tracks. She doesn't like you? That was the impression I got. It has been confirmed by subsequent telegrams to Bobby, in which she refers to me as a guffin and a gabby. She also considers me a nincompoop. Well, that's fine. It looks as though, after you, I shall come to her like... oh, it's on the tip of my tongue. Rare and refreshing fruit? Yeah, exactly. If you care to have a bet on it, 5 bob will get you 10 that this scenario will end with a fade-out of Lady Wickham folding me in her arms and kissing me on the brow and saying she knows I will make her little girl happy. Gosh, Bertie, when I think that she, Bobby, I mean, not Lady Wickham, will soon be mine, and that shortly after yonder sun has set, I shall be tucking into one of Anatole's dinners, I could dance a saraband. By the way, talking of dinner, do you suppose it would also run to a bed? The Bull and Bush is well spoken of in the Automobile Guide, but I'm always a bit wary of these country pubs. I'd much rather be at Brinkley Court, of which I have such happy memories. Could you swing it with your aunt? She isn't here. She left to minister to her son, Bonzo, who is down with German measles at school. But she rang up this afternoon and instructed me to wire you to come and make a prolonged stay. You're pulling my leg. No, that's official. But what made her think of me? Ah, now, there is something she wants you to do for her. Well, she can have anything she likes, even unto half my kingdom. What does... He paused, and a look of alarm came into his face. Don't tell me she wants me to present the prizes at Market Snodsbury Grammar School like Gussie. He was alluding to a mutual friend of ours of the name of Gussie Finknottle, who, hounded by the aged relative into undertaking this task in the previous summer, had got pickled to the gills and made an outstanding exhibition of himself, setting up a mark at which all future orators would shoot in vain. Oh, no, nothing like that. The prizes this year will be distributed by Aubrey Upjohn. Oh, that's a relief. How is he, by the way? You've met him, of course. Oh, yes, we got together. I spilled some tea on him. Well, you couldn't have done better. He's grown a moustache. Oh, that eases my mind. I wasn't looking forward to seeing that bare upper lip of his. Remember how it used to make us all quail when he twitched it at us? I wonder how he'll react when confronted with not only one former pupil, but two, and those two the very brace that have probably haunted him in his dreams for the last 15 years. Ha-ha! Oh, well, might as well unleash me on him now. He isn't here. But you said he was. Ah, yes, he was, and he will be, but he isn't. He's gone up to London. Isn't anybody here? Oh, certainly, there's Phyllis Mills. Nice girl. And Mrs. Homer Cream of New York City, NY, and her son Wilbert. And that brings me to the something Aunt Dahlia wants you to do for her. I was pleased, as I put him hep on the Wilbert-Phyllis situation and revealed the part he was expected to play in it, to note that he showed no sign of being about to issue the presidential veto. He followed the set-up intelligently, and when I had finished, said that of course he would be only too willing to oblige. It wasn't much, he said, to ask of a fellow who esteemed Aunt Dahlia as highly as he did, and who ever since she had lushed him up so lavishly 2 summers ago had been wishing there was something he could do in the way of buying back. "Rely on me, Bertie," he said. "We can't have Phyllis tying herself up with a man who, on the evidence, would appear to be as nutty as a fruitcake.
I will be about this Cream's bed and about his board, spying out all his ways. Every time he lures the poor girl into a leafy glade, I will be there, nestling behind some wildflower, all ready to pop out and gum the game, at the least indication that he is planning to get mushy. Ha! And now, if you will show me to my room, I will have a bath and brush up, so as to be all sweet and fresh for the evening meal. Does Anatole still do those timbales de riz de veau to Lucienne? And the sylphide à la crème d'écrevisse. Ah, there is none like him. None, said Kipper, moistening the lips with the tip of the tongue, and looking like a wolf that has just spotted its Russian peasant. He stands alone.